On the record. On News Talk.
With Pinergy. Supplying energy with insight to forward-thinking Irish businesses.
We're going to talk to Cillian de Gascoigne, someone we speak to fairly regularly on the show, the director of the National Virus Reference Laboratory and the chair of the COVID-19 Expert Advisory Group at NEFET. Cillian, your lab made the news for perhaps some unexpected reasons early in the week. So before we talk about the future of testing and exactly where we stand on different types of testing, can you just explain exactly why the NVRL isn't taking any tests this weekend or next?
Yeah, good morning, Gavin. I can indeed. In essence, we had a small number of cases of SARS-CoV-2 in the laboratory early in the course of the week. And in essence, it meant that we had to take some staff out of the laboratory. So back in March, around the time of, I suppose, the stay-at-home restrictions, we would have split the staff into two teams, in essence to mitigate against this type of situation having a significant impact on the lab and stopping all testing going on. So when the cases were identified earlier in the week, the team that was affected was in essence sent home to either self-isolate or to restrict movements as required, and the team that was, I suppose, off duty, if you like, was called back in. So in essence, that team will have to work really for the next 14 to 15 days. And we felt that it was really, and obviously they've been flogging themselves since March. So we felt that the only fair thing was, in order to ensure that they would have some rest days and some downtime, was that we would not ask them to work this weekend or next weekend. And at that stage, then the affected team will be able to come back into the workplace.
Okay.
But in essence, the numbers that we test, I suppose people probably still have a perception that we're doing the lion's share of the testing.
Well, I was just going to say that, because there probably is still a perception from the start of the whole COVID-19 outbreak, where people would remember some newspaper articles about how the NVRL was the country's biggest testing facility and that it was really, you know, carrying the spine of the whole testing facility. But that's not the case anymore, is it?
No, not at all. You're right. So back in the days of February and March, we would have done the majority of testing for the country. But now we probably, on a Monday to Friday basis, we probably test between 700 and 1,000 specimens per day. And then at the weekends, that would drop down to probably between 600 and 700. So the majority of the specimens from the community sampling hubs are tested in other laboratories. And the HSE has built up significant laboratory capacity over the last 7 months. And so there would be significant increased capacity at the hospitals as well and the acute laboratories. So we, as I said, in discussion with the HSE, we agreed that the weekend was probably the best time to try and switch off our service, purely because there would be additional capacity within the other laboratories to pick up the slack at that time.
Okay, it certainly makes sense. Where has that extra capacity come from? Because obviously there was so much concern at the start of the year about how exactly we would be able to scale up to get to 100,000 a week. And as we understand it now, the extra capacity is there for 120,000 a week. And I think the Taoiseach talked about finding more overseas capacity as well, the likes of the German labs that we used in April to try and clear some of the backlogs. If there was such a scarcity of facilities at the start of the year, how come we've got so much more now?
I suppose purely through planning and through engagement with the private sector. And I have to say that the work that the HSE procurement has done over the last 6 or 7 months. So we now have, in addition to additional capacity in the acute hospital laboratories, we have additional capacity in the community setting. So through Cherry Orchard Hospital, we have support from colleagues in ENFER Animal Health Labs down in Naas. We have support from Eurofins Biomnis up in Sandyford. So really there's significant laboratory capacity that we didn't have back in March, as you have alluded to. But no, thankfully, the HSE has put a huge amount of work into ensuring that capacity is there, and it continues to build over the coming weeks. We have support from our colleagues in the Department of Agriculture, Food and the Marine out of Back Weston as well. So certainly, hopefully, testing capacity won't be a significant challenge for us in the coming months.
Although the number of tests that's been conducted has still gone up steadily and it continues to go up inside the last week or two, thankfully the positivity rate seems to be coming down, but we still have a flat rate of around about 1,000 tests a day that are still coming back as positive, or 1,000 swabs which are being confirmed as having SARS-CoV-2. What's your take on the positivity rate, particularly in different settings? Because there's been a lot pointed to the fact that schools have a lower positivity rate in their serial testing than other domestic or other enclosed social settings.
Yeah, the positivity rate is a very useful measure for us, or a metric by which we can follow. And people, again, will remember over the summer our positivity rate was very low. It was down in the region of probably 2% or 3%, and even lower sometimes. And then and that would have been in patients who were symptomatic, so patients who had symptoms and presented at the community sampling hubs to be tested. Then we would have seen in serial testing settings where individuals didn't have symptoms that the positivity rate was even lower, probably in the region of about 0.2% or 0.3%. So the positivity rate is a useful metric for us because, in essence, it's just a simple reflection of the burden of disease in the population that you're testing. So we would expect to see it higher in those individuals with symptoms, and we would expect to see it lower in those individuals who don't have symptoms. And in the school setting, we have seen a positivity rate that's quite low. And I suppose the other area that we're constantly looking at the positivity rate is in close contacts of cases, because that's been quite useful as well. And we can see that in individuals who are close contacts, the positivity rate at day zero is somewhere in the region of probably about 10 to 12%. And then we know that that falls off at day seven to probably about 2%. So it's a useful metric. It also does give you an indication. Some centers or some countries would use it as an indicator of how much testing you should be doing. So I think people might remember Andrew Cuomo, the New York governor, saying that if his positivity rate went above 3%, that he might sort of look at closing schools over there. Now, we obviously aren't considering anything like that, but it does give you an indication of perhaps the burden of disease in the community and what you might be missing if your positivity rate rises quite dramatically.
Sure.
The fact that we're testing close contacts, which we weren't doing back in March and April, means that we're identifying a lot more cases that would have been, in essence, missed back in the early days.
One of the things I wanted to ask you, though, was whether the when we see the serial testing in schools, whether it's a fair comparison or whether it's sort of apples and oranges, because the positivity rate for all tests overall, like the lion's share of tests are going to be conducted on people who are either showing some sort of COVID-19 symptoms or those who have been referred because of the close contact of someone else who we know to be positive. In a school, you're just doing a random trawl of everyone who's in the building, whether it's pupils or teachers. So of course you're going to have a lower positivity rate, aren't you? Because you don't have as much reason to suspect that they've got it in the first place.
So I don't know that there are many random trawls being done in schools at this point in time. It's typically linked to a case and the public health risk assessment as to whether the close contacts need to be tested or whether that involves a pod or a class or an entire year. And perhaps in some situations with small schools where there's lots of intermingling, the whole school might need to be tested. But broadly speaking, the serial testing programs that we've been doing to date of asymptomatics have been in the likes of healthcare workers and residential care facilities in the meat processing plants in direct provision, those type of areas. We haven't as of yet started serial testing in schools, purely because we don't believe that there's an indication for it at this point in time. But if cases arise, there's a public health risk assessment carried out, and then testing is performed on that basis. But you're right, if you're testing a cohort that doesn't have symptoms and therefore is less likely to be infected, then yes, you would expect the positivity rate to be lower in that setting. But I think the figures that were quoted, I think, related to the positivity rate in close contacts of cases in schools versus in the population at large of symptomatic individuals.
Can I ask you about antigen testing? Because there's a headline at the front of the Sunday Times today about how, you know, NPHET is looking at perhaps rolling these out in schools, so at least you'd have some sort of reassurance that there was, you know, a virus-free environment if you could have something with a quicker turnaround. And obviously this could have huge knock-on complications or consequences for air travel if you could perhaps, you know, take a very quick return test. Are they reliable? Because there seems to be some question mark about, you know, whether in exchange for getting a quicker result, whether in fact you could have a higher margin of error and that more positives could slip through the cracks with these.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's a really good question. And I'm sure people are probably sick of the discussion about antigen testing at this point in time and probably feel that we're very reluctant to embrace new technology. That's not the case at all. The test we have at the moment, PCR, is in essence the most accurate, the most sensitive and most specific test. Antigen testing, by definition, is just less sensitive. And in some circumstances, that might not necessarily be a bad thing. However, you generally have to compensate for that lack of sensitivity. And the way you compensate for that is either you test a larger number of people. So, for example, in an outbreak setting, antigen testing may well have a role, purely because if you're testing 20 people with symptoms, you're very unlikely to get 20 false negatives with an antigen test. Similarly, the other alternative, if you want to compensate for the reduced sensitivity, is perhaps you increase the frequency of testing. And that's the principle that, again, on a serial basis, you're unlikely to get repeated false negatives. However, that's a principle that hasn't really been proven at this point in time, but it's speculative. Now, we are very happy to look at all new technologies as they come to the market. We believe that the antigen testing will improve, but the problem is it depends what you're trying to achieve in the context of a testing program. If you want to identify all cases, then antigen testing might not be quite at that level yet. However, there may be a role for it to be used in the context of, as I said, an outbreak, so a rapid investigation. But equally, then, if you identify all the people who don't identify as cases or aren't identified by the antigen test as being cases in an outbreak setting, they would still have to go on and have PCR testing done to facilitate the contact tracing exercise.
Okay, so it'd be a multi-layered thing. It just wouldn't be a plain substitute. It would be an extra tool in the armory. Okay,
exactly.
Fair enough. Can I just get you to respond then to one particular issue? And I know that vaccines aren't your specific area of research, but given your lab expertise, you might be able to comment on this. So I want to play you another quick clip of Dr. Anthony Fauci, who was speaking to Andrew Marr on the BBC about the idea of a vaccine.
We will know whether a vaccine is safe and effective by the end of November, the beginning of December. The question is, once you have a safe and effective vaccine or more than one, how can you get it to the people who need it as quickly as possible? So the amount of doses that will be available in December will not certainly be enough to vaccinate everybody. You'll have to wait several months into 2021.
That's Anthony Fauci talking about the whole production of a vaccine. Very briefly, Killian, do you share his optimism about the possibility of having a viable vaccine that quickly? And then do you share his optimism about how quickly it could be manufactured so that everyone who wants it can get it?
Yeah, I suppose it depends. He may well have access to, I suppose, to more information, but I guess Pfizer has been quite bullish in the last couple of weeks that they are planning to apply for emergency use authorization from the FDA, I think, in the second or third week in November. So they obviously have confidence in the work that they've done. We know that AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson are very well advanced as well, but their trials were paused because of have restarted again, having been paused because of a minor safety concern. But I think what Dr. Fauci says there is really important. Like, safety has to be paramount with any new vaccine, and effectiveness is obviously key. But safety, when you're injecting otherwise well people with any sort of foreign agent, you really need to be careful, and safety has to be paramount. So if Pfizer are if the data that they share supports their optimism and their confidence, then it does look like we will have data to analyze at least before the end of the year. And then I think it's Dr. Fauci is absolutely right. Rolling that out, the manufacturing capacity needed to get a vaccine to the guts of 7 billion people globally will be a massive exercise. So realistically, it's difficult to see it being widely available before the middle of next year. But what we'll have to do is identify which patient groups we want to prioritize to protect. And also we'll need to see which individuals were studied in the trials that the drug companies have done. Because, for example, sometimes they might not include patients in vulnerable groups. They might not include children. They might not include people with underlying conditions. So there's a huge amount of data that we'll have to look at and knowledge that we still need to acquire before we'll be rolling anything out universally, I would think.
Okay, fair enough. A very fair point, and certainly very good to have that sort of insight in hand. Killian de Goskin, we'll leave it there. Director of the National Virus Reference Laboratory and Chair of the Expert Advisory Group at COVID-19 at NEFIT. Thank you very much for joining us this lunchtime.